Good morning and welcome to Spotlight Indianapolis. I'm Nancy Sierra. Glad you could join us today. I have a wonderful guest this morning talking about a really, really interesting program, LifeNet, that's a humanitarian relief organization serving people around the world. Some incredible projects that Vic Kubik, who is the director and president of LifeNet, is spearheading and doing some incredible things. And he's going to tell us about LifeNet today. Good morning, Vic.
Good morning, Nancy.
Glad you could be here today.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Well, we have a lot to cover. There's a lot of things that you are doing through your programs all over the world, and I'm excited to hear about them and have the listeners hear about them as well. Why don't you tell us about the formation of LifeNet, what type of organization it is, and also you have a very interesting background in how you got involved in all this.
Well, LifeNet was formed in 1999 here in Indianapolis, and I have been doing humanitarian work for about 6 years, and at first I was doing it as a volunteer, working through other organizations, through churches and informal groups. But then it got to be a little bit unwieldy, you know, having one organization, another one. And I was interviewed on programs like this, and it was very confusing to talk about, you know, who I was.
Right.
So an organization here, Caldwell Van Riper, helped us get organized and helped us with a name and the PR work, and they donated a lot of time and helped us get set up in 1999, and we became a 501c3 and have functioned in that way since. Mm-hmm. And we have grown incredibly.
And what inspired you to do this? Because you were already helping out and doing a lot of types of humanitarian relief, and like you said, there was some disorganization, or it got to be kind of difficult to bring everyone to the table. So,
actually, I haven't been in humanitarian work that long.
Okay.
I would say since 1995, because before this, I've been a minister. Still, I'm a
mm-hmm.
minister, but. I've traveled around the world and did administration work and got to know a lot of people. And
right.
I thought to myself, well, I'd like to do something in those areas more than just do, you know, administrative things for a church. And
yes.
So that's where all my contacts have come.
Okay.
But how it all began was in 1995, I was at a ministerial conference in England, and across the table at a banquet was a surgeon who was retiring. And I found out that he was one of the top 10 surgeons in endocrinology, and he was a cancer specialist, and he had just read a report that thyroid cancer increased by a factor of 10 in Ukraine after the Chernobyl accident.
Okay.
And so he says, I've got to get over there, I'm retiring, I want to do some humanitarian work.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I speak Ukrainian, and I'd love to go with you. And we thought this was just dinner talk.
Uh-huh,
but,
right.
4 months later, we were both in Ukraine, and we were the guests of the head pediatrician at the time of the accident at Chernobyl.
Oh, my goodness.
And he has become a very close and dear friend of ours. He's mm-hmm. been here to Indianapolis, and that's where it all began in 1995.
Over this dinner conversation.
Over this dinner conversation. That's how it really began. And then when we went to visit in 1996, mm-hmm. which was the 10th anniversary of Chernobyl,
right.
I said, God, help me find a way to help these people, because I didn't know where to start or what to do. And
what did you see when you went there? Was it?
Oh, we saw cold hospitals. We saw... We saw people who had a lot of needs, but no supplies. We saw a lot of intelligent people. We saw a country where there was just so much devastation and poverty, where the accident took place in probably one of the worst possible areas, where people could not help themselves afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as time goes by, people forget. And that's been a big frustration about Chernobyl.
Okay.
And also, they told us when we went to Chernobyl that, please don't come if you're not going to help, because we've had so many people from the press, from ministries, come and take a look and say, we'll be back with you, we'll get back with you. And they said, if you're going to come and just look and feel badly for us and not do anything, please don't come.
Right, right.
And so I was committed to do that, mm-hmm. and we have since worked with this rehabilitation center for 7 years now
mm-hmm.
and have done quite a bit of work with it.
That's wonderful. So this is now an official LifeNet project?
This is our first project,
uh-huh.
and it's one that we keep going. We've helped double the capacity of this center last year. We've built a playground.
Oh,
we provide medicine. We just bought them an EEG machine last
mm-hmm.
month. We're taking a delegation of 6 people from central Indiana in January to go there. We want to establish a Riley Hospital contact with them. So it's really moving along very well. That's been our premier project.
So you're seeing a lot of progress.
It's just been tremendous.
How are the people doing there?
I would say that right now it's just a little bit better, but Ukraine, after the country separated from the USSR, has gotten more poor, and economically it's the pits. Doctors make a salary of $60 a month.
Oh my goodness.
And in one way, it makes it easier for us to work there because very little goes a long ways. But the poverty is intense.
But you think, where do you begin sometimes, I'm sure?
Well, that's always a question.
Baby steps.
Where we begin, what we decide is that this is what we will do. Instead of being overwhelmed by everything that can be done and not doing anything, we just say, we will do this.
Well, that leads into my next question. What would the characteristics of LifeNet's projects be? And also, kind of a twofold question then, how do you identify the groups or the areas that you're going to be working?
Well, our mission statement is to help needy people in practical ways, where we do things that really make a difference, and then do things that help them become self-sufficient. Our projects have a beginning and an end, so they're not just an endless charity project, but they all have focus on helping them help themselves. And that's what we've done with this center in Ukraine. But then we've spread out to Western Ukraine, where we work with a very backward area, where I've gotten to know people 12 years ago and have worked there. In fact, we have registered LifeNets in Ukraine, and we're a registered charity in Ukraine, as we are in several countries in Africa as well. Then we, from there, spread to Latin America, where I have had a lot of connections with my church work. And LifeNets is non-denominational in that it's not part of any church, but since I have been a pastor and administrator working in places around the world, I have established these contacts and used them as jumping-off places.
So when you identify where you might be going, say, for example, your work in Malawi or Zambia, which you'll talk a little bit about, when you see there's a need in another location, somebody might call your attention to that, and you think, well, maybe we can do some work here. You said there's always a beginning and an end, or so you set the goals for the program and what you're going to achieve. Like, we're going to take so much medicine to these people, and we are going to make sure that they're educated, or explain that a little bit.
Well, for example, Malawi would be a good case.
Okay.
At a church conference in Zimbabwe, I met the director of a clinic, and we got to talking. And because of our success in Ukraine, I thought, well, I wonder if we can do the same in Malawi.
Okay.
And we got the Department of Defense to ship us a container of hospital supplies and food and blankets and that type of thing. It worked. It was just, I thought, hey, this is...
Did you make the contact with it?
I worked through another organization that kind of knew people, and it's called the Denton Program. It's really hard to get into because it's on a space available basis and there's a lot of restrictions, but we were able to make it work. Then after they showed that they were really excellent as far as distribution of the things we gave them, they asked if we could build a clinic for them. I thought, oh man, how am I going to build a clinic? And found out that for $25,000, we built a clinic. That's with buying the land and building a clinic and a birthing center.
Oh my goodness, and it's state-of-the-art medical?
It's considered one of the nicest little clinics in the capital city of Lilongwe.
I like how you say that.
But it was opened last October 15th of 2001, actually a little over a year ago. And then I became acquainted with another doctor through him, 2 hours south, who had a clinic that he started building, but because of the devaluation of the local currency 4 years ago, they stopped building it. And we have completed the construction of that. And we have gotten assistance from foundations here in Indianapolis, such as the Moore, and St. Vincent's has helped us tremendously. And a lot of support because we've already been successful. We've finished this clinic now.
Oh, my goodness.
And then we ship medicine to both these clinics, the only medicine that they have. And we buy it at 2% of wholesale cost. We buy it in Holland. And quarterly, we have it airshipped to the airport. And these two clinics, we have it, you know, where they divide it up.
Right.
And so for $1,000, which is our budget quarterly, we buy $30,000 worth of medicine.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's antibiotics, anti-malaria, medicines, vitamins, just many prescriptions medicines that we supply these people. And it's a regular, steady, ongoing process.
How do they determine with the people? I know Malawi is very, very poor.
Third poorest country in the world.
That's what I thought. Okay. And so these people have to trek and come a long distance usually to go to one of these clinics, don't they, Vic?
Well, actually, the clinic in Lilongwe, the capital, is a regional clinic where people walk. It's a very urban clinic.
Okay.
The other one is one that people come a longer distance to. It's in the Muslim area of Malawi. It serves a community of 120,000 people, and it's the only non-government clinic in that area. And if you would see a government clinic, you would know why this is a very highly desired clinic.
I see. And so the people can come, and they can receive the antibiotics or the services necessary?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's a private clinic, but, for example, a total cost of a visit is $3. Children, $2, and 75% can't pay.
So, oh, I'm sure.
So here's this is the economy that we're dealing with.
Right, because most of these people, what would probably be their main source of income there? Farming,
raising maize. Yes, the income there is $40 a month, and right now 1/3 of the country is in famine, and they've had a drought, and it's in a very serious state.
Do you ship food or take food over?
Actually, we have just shipped 6 tons of food for the people, but we're trying to. Actually, you can buy food closer in, like in South Africa and other places. If you have the money, you can buy it. But we did ship 6 tons of food donated to us by milling companies and rice growers and that type of thing.
What type of donations do you need?
Well, I'll be very honest. The number one donation is money, and
we—that's very honest. Yeah.
Well, we're able to stretch every dollar at least 20 times over.
Uh-huh.
For example, medicine. If you give us a dollar, it means that we buy $50 worth of medicine. So that's just that. Mm-hmm. The economics of that is just that simple.
And it goes right to that project too.
Right. Last year, we were proud to say that 97.2% of the money donated went directly to programs. We have nobody who's paid on our LifeNet's staff. We just have a lot of interested people who want to make things work overseas. And I'll be very honest, we are very efficient, and we know one of our guiding directives is that we work with people we know over there. Everybody that we work with, I've visited, I've stayed in their home, I've slept in their bed, I've gotten to know their children. We have a very, very close connection with them. But also, on this end, we have tremendous support that's come from the Center of Philanthropy at IUPUI, from Judy O'Bannon, First Lady of Indiana. She has boosted us into a different orbit, actually, since 1999 when I got to know her. We've had support from foundations such as the Lilly Endowment and others who have donated, who are beginning to see that we deliver and that we accomplish what we said about.
What you're saying that you're going to. I've had Mrs. O'Bannon on my show. She does some wonderful things. We have talked more about Hoosier Millennium in Indiana 2016, but I know she's led several delegations, one being to South Africa, correct, about a year ago. And I think that she probably, like you said, helped so much with that, as well as, I think, Moldova, another place that she goes, and helping a lot of families there.
We actually had our LifeNet's affiliate give a presentation in South Africa, in Johannesburg. They did a PowerPoint presentation of all of our projects. But she led a delegation to Russia in 1999, and that's where I got to know her. And she just really sold us. The Hoosiers.
She made us proud.
She sure did. They still talk about it.
Oh, that's great. Well, so you talked about some of the partners and types of things. Donations.
Monetary donations are the number one donation. Sometimes we send containers In fact, Judy O'Bannon has just asked us to do one to Moldova with doctors in Fort Wayne. And so we're in the process of trying to get that one over there for an orphan program.
Mm-hmm.
So we do that, but we don't have a warehouse, and sometimes it's not the easiest to collect that way. But financial donations go the furthest, and we're totally tax exempt.
Okay. Do you travel to all these places constantly throughout the year, Vic, and looking at the ongoing projects and making sure everything's going okay?
I've traveled to a lot of them, not every year, to every single one.
Okay.
But I do travel. For example, I'm going to Ukraine again. Mm-hmm. I was there last year. I traveled to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I have several trips planned to Central and South America. I've been to all those places,
mm-hmm.
but I have very trusted people in those areas
that are working
that report to me, that tell me what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Our website, lifenets.org, tells the whole story, and we hold everybody to a high level of accountability.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit. There's this, I think, one of your smaller projects you thought, but it caught my eye on your website about the Project Linus Afghanistan Baby Blanket Project.
Mm-hmm. Why
you have to do this, because what these children, how they suffer from the cold.
Well, Afghanistan has been a heartbreaking story,
yeah.
As we all know.
Right.
And we simply had some women in the church that I pastor,
mm-hmm.
that got together and sewed a lot of blankets, and we delivered them to one central location, and then we got word that they were delivered from Tajikistan into Afghanistan. It was just gave us a lot of satisfaction to be able to do that.
And it went to?
It went to children.
Right.
It went to children. We also had a similar one that delivered school supplies,
mm-hmm.
to Afghan children.
The children, it gets very cold there at night. People don't, or you may have heard on the news, mm-hmm. as recently, it gets very cold at night. A lot of them, mm-hmm. obviously, there's no heat. They are in, what, plastic-type tents and things? So.
Right. That's the ones that are issued in the refugee camps.
Okay.
And they're at very high elevation. Of course, many homes have been destroyed.
Right,
right. Fuel is in short supply. And it's just the suffering that the children go through is just beyond comprehension. But we have worked with the Linus Project, and we've worked with another project,
mm-hmm.
For delivering school supplies.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what you did to help out in New York City after 9/11.
That was a tremendous story.
Mm-hmm.
After 9/11 took place, you know, we were all just kind of, people ask each other, well, what could we do? What
right.
can we do? And I got a call from a friend in Paducah, Kentucky, who is the director of the Red Cross. He was an old acquaintance of mine who I've not had contact with in over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we've just been donated a lot of firefighter supplies, hats, goggles, jackets, boots. And he says, Red Cross, we just aren't equipped, you know, to
right.
deliver this. And he said that, I can help out LifeNets. He said, why don't I just deliver them? And he brought up a whole truck of firefighter supplies within a week of the accident. I went to a U-Haul on Michigan Avenue here,
uh-huh.
and they gave me a truck for just pennies,
uh-huh.
you know, about 20% of the cost of the truck. A friend of mine who is the International Director of International Affairs at Butler University, she and her husband drove that truck. I have a friend also who works four blocks north of Ground Zero,
mm-hmm.
whose office was closed, who helped get these things to the Javits Center. And we had 5 tons of supplies.
Oh, my gosh.
Delivered there 11 days.
Oh.
And we had the Kiwanis help here,
uh-huh.
And my Rotary Club
mm-hmm.
Paid for the fuel. So it cost us virtually zero.
Wow. You know how to make these great partnerships.
Well, we feel like it's just kind of all came together,
yeah.
one thing after another.
Right.
But that was a real success story. At that time, everybody was just really helping one another.
Sure. Yes, you know. That's right. But you made a good comment before we were talking a little bit off air that you said we know that giving is still very much up, not down after 9/11.
It's not down at all.
And that people really, really have that generous spirit to help out.
LifeNets has doubled since 9/11.
Isn't that something? Oh, my. Tell us a little bit about Central America. We haven't really touched on
Central
that part
America
of the
is,
world.
It's in our hemisphere,
mm-hmm.
and it's extremely poor.
Mm-hmm.
We had several projects that we were asked to help with. One was putting in concrete floors in homes.
Mm-hmm.
They said, that's what we need. And I thought, why do people want concrete floors? I mean, aren't there other things? But that's very important because children walk on these muddy floors and get worms and diseases, and a concrete floor makes a big difference. Then, also, we have helped with scholarships. If people are prepared for a job, they don't. When they face the 75% unemployment rate, they have a better chance. And we have sent students to college studying law, accounting, architecture for $400 a year. And this gives them a boost. And this is part of our philosophy of helping people help themselves. But scholarships has been a super success, and it's been well administered by scholarship committees. That's been very, very well done.
What are some of the barriers that some of the volunteers or people that travel to these places and are helping that they might encounter other than a language barrier? And sometimes is it dangerous?
I would say that the very poor areas that we have projects in are dangerous. Malawi, from the standpoint of disease,
are
more than anything else.
Okay.
I know that people have asked me, I want to go to Malawi, but when you consider the diseases that are prevalent.
What, AIDS, malaria?
Well, malaria, AIDS, the works.
Okay.
All of the above. And I just would not feel comfortable about just sending people unsupervised. My wife and I go there. We plan to go to visit our two clinics that we have built in Malawi. You know, but we know where to be.
You get the necessary shots and things that probably you need.
We get the malaria shots. And we know what to citronella and everything else.
Right.
You know, all the little tricks. I know that people sometimes want to do something, but to be very honest, unless they know what they're doing, they sometimes can get in the way. And it's just has to be really thought through what they do. We're taking a delegation of six people in January to Ukraine, to the center near Chernobyl. And that's well thought through. They have places for us to stay. It's with people I know. We have a mission in mind, and we have very definite goals that we want to achieve.
And also, these people pay their own way, correct?
Yes.
You're not able to sponsor. LifeNets is not able to.
However, when we get there, these people give us their apartments. They feed us.
Your contacts.
All the contacts make it very, very, let's say, attractive.
Everyone needs to know you're not staying in a five-star hotel or even a Holiday Inn and eating a great meal every night and doing. You're staying with people
That's exactly how we do it.
That's wonderful.
First of all, it sends a message, and also that's where the work really gets done.
Sure. How would you say that the listeners could get involved in helping your organization? But also beyond that, I just think that your LifeNets and what you've done, Vic, is such a success story because you seem to have pulled in a lot of different people all over the world that helps so that you can oversee it, but then you can let them continue on. How can people do that? Because there's so many people out there that really do want to help. And also, you don't do as much locally. So again, my question is twofold, and why is that?
Well, I feel that there are many people who do things locally already.
Okay.
I could start something in more projects locally, but my experience has been overseas. And so I work where I know I can make a difference.
Okay.
I fill special niches in areas that really have needs, where other organizations wouldn't fit in or help out. I would say that as far as helping out, I would say follow our website, see the types of things that we are doing, give me a telephone call, I'll be very glad to answer any questions about specifics and how you can volunteer. But we're always looking for financial donations because overseas you get a lot of bang for the buck. And we're able to leverage every dollar 20 times over, at least, because of the programs that help us, because of support that we have, the deep discounts on medicine, all that type of thing makes it very easy to leverage $1 into 20 or more dollars.
People need food, they need medical care. What are some of the other needs of some of these people that may not seem as obvious, like the concrete floors?
The concrete floors was also basic habitat.
Right, okay.
We had, for example, many people live, 5-6 people in a room. This is very typical in Central America, where we could build an extra room for $200-$300.
Sure.
And that just provides, I cannot believe one family of nine living in one room. year-round, every day. I mean, I don't know how they do it. So we built two extra rooms for $200, and that's basically providing just better habitat.
Mm-hmm.
One of the less obvious is the college scholarships.
Yeah.
For $400, you can send somebody to a university for an entire year mm-hmm. and help them have a decent job. That is a tremendous investment.
For $400 a year.
In El Salvador, we send 21 students to university for $8,400.
Oh, my goodness.
You could
goodness.
Not go to Butler for one semester for that.
That's bad. Used to, when I used to go there many years ago. But that's very true. That's very true. College scholarships. Okay. That's good. So people can look at your website and they can see what you're working on. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of my last questions, we're almost through here, is what do you want to accomplish with the organization the next year?
Well, our goal is to eventually, last year we're at half a million dollars. We crossed over that line, $503,000.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to be able to continue the programs we're on. We're not so anxious to expand to new ones because we want to do the ones that we're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But we eventually want to peak out at about $1 or $2 million
mm-hmm.
A year, at least with the type of help and the staff and volunteer help that we have.
Mm-hmm.
We have had a lot of good advice from the Center on Philanthropy. That actually Judy O'Bannon helped the director at that time, Les Lankowski,
mm-hmm.
Help us to get involved. And now one of the top professors, Lilia Wagner, is on our board mm-hmm. and has given us tremendous mentorship mm-hmm. and support.
Mm-hmm.
I give a lot of credit to her.
That's wonderful, mm-hmm. and they sound like they deserve very much credit for all of this.
Well, Indiana is known as the world center of philanthropy. IUPUI and the Center for Philanthropy is the best center mm-hmm. on the study of philanthropic work mm-hmm. anywhere in the world. It's mm-hmm. It has that reputation.
Mm-hmm. One more thing we should be proud of here in Indiana.
Yeah.
That's right. Last thing, Vic, why don't you give your number and also our website
okay.
number?
Call me at 216-0802 locally or toll-free 888-821-0095 or look at our website at LifeNets, LifeNets.org.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it's plural.
Mm-hmm.
LifeNets.org. And that has a lot of information and a lot of other contact information.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two places. And if you would like us to send you more information, we would be very happy to talk to you on the telephone
mm-hmm.
or send you some literature.
Mm-hmm. It's very important. So helping out in other parts of the world, but also people can help out in our own community right here too
mm-hmm.
as well. But donations, monetary is...
I would say that, you know, that is probably the number one thing, unless sure. there's some equipment, such as computers or medical equipment,
yes.
that if you could check with me beforehand,
mm-hmm.
That could be used. But we want to ship only the best quality and the top things,
mm-hmm.
Even used things that really work well, that will give them good service.
Great. Okay. Well, I think it's important to work through LifeNets. I think they... Vic, you seem to be able to direct them in the right way, and you have some great contacts out there, too. So.
Well, thank you for the support, Nancy.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us this morning. I've been talking with Vic Kubik, and he is the president of LifeNets. And again, if you want to help out, the website is, Vic?
LifeNets.org.
Okay.
Don't even have to put a www there.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy.
I'm Nancy Sierra, and you've been listening to Spotlight Indianapolis. Thanks for joining us this morning. Have a great day.